Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So it's been introduced as a talk on Bhagavad Gita, but you're all from VIT, Velo Institute of Technology, and proud of it. So let's talk a little bit about science. I don't know much about science, not as much as all of you. Probably you know a lot more than I do, but I do know that hydrogen and oxygen combines to form water. That's a really advanced science, isn't it? You all know that, right? What's the chemical formula? 2H2 plus 2H2 equals 2H2O. Right, you all know that, right? For me, that's high-level science. Okay, now how do you know that? How do you know that, actually? How do you know that hydrogen and oxygen combine to form water? When you look at water, it's a liquid, right? And hydrogen's a gas, and oxygen's a gas, and the air is gas, and the air is mostly composed of nitrogen, there's some oxygen there, and carbon dioxide. They're all gases. So when you combine hydrogen and oxygen, why don't you get a gas? There's an answer for that. There's a scientific answer. Do you know it? Well, it's got to do something with the nature of hydrogen and oxygen. Well, that could bring us to another question. Why does it form hydrogen monoxide, which is the technical name for water, and not hydrogen dioxide, H2O2? There's an answer for all of this, right? Maybe you know, maybe you don't know, because after all, you're in technology, which is based on science, but it's not science per se. It's, you could say, it's applied science. Maybe if you're doing nautical engineering, you might need to know these things. Is there any nautical engineering department here? No, we're not on the sea, so it's not such a good place to have nautical engineering. Okay, how do you know hydrogen and oxygen combine to form water? You burn hydrogen in the air, right? It burns, and you condense it and you get water. Okay. How do you know what you're burning is hydrogen? And how do you know there's oxygen in the air, and why doesn't it react with the nitrogen? Now, these might sound like very silly questions. Did you ever think of them? You just take it for granted, right? In the school, in the chemistry class, when you're about 12 years old or something, they show you some experiment and they say, hey, we got water. And then, how do you know it's water? Well, you can separate it into oxygen and hydrogen, but that just puts you back. It's like a circular argument, isn't it? So what point am I getting at here? The point is that you accept a lot of what is called science on faith, right? It's said that science is fact and religion is faith. You must have heard that, right? And science is real. And religion, well, it's something you can believe in if you like. But it's not really as good as science, because science is based on fact. But to learn science, you have to accept on faith so many things, right? They bring the hydrogen in, what do they bring? I can't remember, maybe in a beaker or something. And you believe the teacher when they say, this is hydrogen. And now we're going to burn it. And why does burning combine it? Why not some other process? At every step, you could raise questions, and it's by raising questions that scientific discoveries are made. But in the classroom, if you ask questions at every juncture, then you'll be thrown out of the class. Because you're supposed to accept what is told and supposed to try and understand it. So what's that got to do with spiritual life? Can you see where I'm getting at here? What we're dealing with in spiritual knowledge, we're talking about spiritual knowledge, not faith, is something that you have to accept in the beginning to a large degree on faith. And even the big, big top scientists, they don't inquire into all the methodologies and all the underlying axioms. Science is based on some accepted axioms. Axiom, do you know the word? It means something which is just accepted by everyone, and you can't, you may not be able to prove it or demonstrate it, but it seems to make sense. And you, all the, everyone who's dealing in science, everyone has to accept certain conventions. You don't even think about this because we just do it, but we accept certain conventions. For instance, I don't have a whiteboard here, but if I make a sign something like that, that means one, right? And one means one. One, whatever this is, tissue dabba. It's one. One flower. And if I write a sign, two, then you understand that corresponds to the idea of two. There's nothing two there, but it's an idea of two. And it can be written other ways also. In Hindi script, it's written differently. In Bengali script, it's written differently. In Tamil script, it's written differently, but no one knows Tamil script for numbers. It's largely forgotten nowadays. So we accept so many conventions. Here's another convention that we all accept. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Then we have two numbers, 1, 0. It's a very good system, right? The Romans didn't have that. How did they build aqueducts and viaducts and bridges? It's very difficult to do mathematics with Roman numerals. We looked at that question before. What if you went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, then another number, and then 1, 0? Then your mathematics, all your square roots, and everything would be really messed up if you had 11 as the base. So we subscribe to certain conventions. And we have to have faith in the teacher. And the faith goes all the way up. Any civil engineers here now? Students of civil engineering. Okay, so in future you're going to be building bridges maybe? Do you experiment when you build a bridge? No, you have to build a bridge. It has to be right the first time. What happened in Morbi? The bridge collapsed? Was it the engineer got his calculations wrong, or the materials were not up to standard, or the standard of workmanship was not up to standard? If you're overseeing a bridge construction, which is a very responsible thing to do, as was just seen in Morbi in Gujarat, if you're going to oversee that, you're going to have trust that the materials supplied, you may have to check the materials supplied are good quality. But you can't check every worker at every moment. Actually, you should check what's being done. If there's any negligence, then it's disaster. Now, when you're designing the bridge, you have to have faith that what you've been taught and what you've been graduated in is correct, because it has a practical application. And if you don't study properly, you can't be... If you just pass with a very low grade in civil engineering, I wouldn't want to put you in front of building a bridge. You have to be top grade, right? You have to really know what you're doing to build a bridge or to build a skyscraper or anything. To build anything, even to build a small house. Your pillars in this room? Civil engineering. If it was a standalone single-story structure, you wouldn't need pillars, right? If it was built properly. So what are we getting here? We have to have faith. Faith means theoretical, and we have to have trust also in the people who are teaching us and the people who are assisting us. What has this got to do with spiritual life? Everything, absolutely everything. Because in spiritual life, we have to accept on faith that, okay, let's come to Bhagavad Gita. Parastasmat tu bhavo nyo vyakto vyatsaktat sanatanaha. Beyond this material existence, in which everything comes into being and then is destroyed, right? You build a good bridge in course of time, it'll be destroyed. This body has come into being, now it's 66 years old almost, and it's not going to be another 66 years. I don't have any scientific proof of that, but it's predictable. Not everything can be proved, some things are predictable. So everything comes into being and everything has an end, but Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, there is a platform of existence beyond the temporary. Can you prove it? Actually, there are proofs. But it may be proof by deduction or induction. Just like I can't prove, no one can prove right now that I'm not going to live another 66 years in this body. Can anyone prove that all men are mortal? Is it possible to prove? But it's accepted. It seems to make a lot of sense. So, that there is spiritual existence beyond the humdrum life of living in this world, getting born, getting old, it's no fun getting old, building bridges. It's not that much fun building bridges, maybe the first time you do it. A sense of achievement, maybe. Driving over the bridge, when people drive over the bridge, they don't get an ecstatic high feeling because you're driving over a bridge. After all, this world is pretty uninteresting. But there is something more. Krishna tells us, beyond this world of repeated birth and death, there is spiritual existence. Now, repeated birth and death. Can that be proved scientifically, that there's repeated birth and death? Well, it's something like, are all men mortal, or will I live to be 132 years old? You can't exactly prove it, but there's a lot of anecdotal evidence. If you go on YouTube and look up reincarnation, there's so much anecdotal evidence that it's hard to explain in any other way why some kid in California at the age of 5 for the first time goes to a piano and perfectly plays Mozart's piano compositions. How does he know that? Well, one good explanation, and I don't know if there is any other good explanation, is it something which has come through from a previous life. So many instances of people who remember their previous life in which they were violently killed, and you can trace back to the previous life, and it may be on the other side of the world, and they have some scar on their body. The child is born with this, just like if someone is shot in the chest in Sri Lanka, and is born in France or something like that, and they remember a previous life, and they have a scar right where the bullet entered. There's so many instances like that. Well, I don't know about you, but personally I'm convinced about reincarnation. Probably many of you believe in it, because most of you here probably are from a Hindu background. And when you're born in a Hindu family, you tend to believe in reincarnation. But personally, I'm convinced about it. Not just as a matter of faith, but because it explains so much which cannot otherwise be explained. That's how scientific theories are accepted, right? Because it explains so many things. Just like, there was Galileo and Kepler, and they had various ideas that the universe is not geocentric. But it was Newton who really came and gave the science which showed, allowed those theories to work, because the geocentric theory, when you start looking with your telescope and it doesn't, and you see the motions of the planets, and it just doesn't seem to work. So you have a paradigm, and then when you investigate more and more and more, you find there are so many problems in the paradigm, you have to come up with a new paradigm. This one fits. So then we had Newtonian physics, and everything was perfect. Science is on it. Of course, there are many more things to be investigated and researched, but science is on the right course. Now with science, we can explain everything. In due course of time, with science, we'll be able to explain everything. That was the understanding. And that understanding, or misunderstanding, is still going on, despite the fact that for 100 years now, or more, quantum theory has just turned Newtonian. It builds on that, but it just raises so many questions which are unanswered even after 100 years. And no one has come up with any real solutions, or they try to bring in the nature of the universe and then relativity theory and quantum theory and combine it and bring in string theory, but there's no way to prove it or falsify it, and 11 dimensions, they say, well, you're talking about God and a spiritual world, and it doesn't seem very realistic. Well, what about 11-dimension reality that's often in string theory? That doesn't sound very realistic either. What about the multiverse theory? The idea that, when we take all the physical constants which are required for the universe to be as it is now, which has given rise to life, there's so many constants, fine-tuning. It appears that there must be some intelligence behind it, and some power behind it to fine-tune the universe, otherwise it couldn't be the way it is. But then if you want to avoid that and say there's no God, well, you could say, there are multiverses, there are millions of, not millions, not trillions, not quadrillions, they're just unlimited numbers of universes. And if you have enough chances, then there has to be some universe in which all the variables are just right to have it the way we have it now. Well, that doesn't sound like science either. Where did all the universes come from? Actually, in Vedic and Puranic cosmology, multiverses are explained. It's not the word universe means one, right? But in Vedic cosmology, the jagat, gachatiti jagat, that which is always moving, that's the definition in Sanskrit, that which is always moving is called the jagat. It is composed of multiple brahmandas. The word used is brahmanda. And each brahmanda is not exactly round, it's something like an egg shape. So that's all. But in each universe, it's not that by chance some anthropic principle, here we all are. And the anthropic principle means that, we must be here because we're here. That's the anthropic principle. Everything's right for us to be here, and it must have been right because we're here. But the Vedic cosmology describes that life comes from life. The atheism, which is largely promoted in the name of science, postulates that life comes from matter. That there was a Big Bang, of course. Big Bang theory is also sputtered out because Big Bang Theory is on its way out. I don't know if they teach you that in their schools, but it takes time for the... I'll tell you a little anecdote. It takes time for the curriculum to catch up with what's understood. I'll tell you one thing. When I was at school in biology class, I was told that the living cell, I'm not talking about battery cells, I'm talking about living cells like in our bodies. Animal cells differentiated from plant cells. Okay, we were taught that it's a very simple phenomenon, and very soon scientists will be able to duplicate it in the laboratory. So I wrote my test, I gave the answer. I don't think even in the class they made a differentiation between, at that stage, between plant cells and animal cells. But anyway, I passed my test, very good. Now if you wrote that today, would you pass? No, you get a failure. So I found out many years later that actually that's not true, that more research is done, and actually the biological cell is extremely complex. The basic building block of of all flora and fauna is extremely complex, and we can hardly even understand it, let alone reproduce it. So I thought, oh, okay, science has progressed. Then more years later, I found out that it was understood at the time they taught me in the school that the biological cell is very simple, that they already knew that it was already complex, but they didn't have time to update their curriculum and retrain all the teachers. So they're teaching us a bunch of buckwass, a bunch of nonsense, in the name of science. So the idea is, what we're taught is that life arises from matter. The story goes like this. Once upon a time, there was nothing. It exploded. And it's still going on exploding. And then in the first millisecond or tiny amount of time, everything, all the laws of the universe came into being. Right? Story okay now? So far, so good. All the laws of the universe came into being. And then there was a bit of bubbling around, and there's some gases settled down, and they made some bubbling liquid. And then there was some light shining on it from somewhere. And then it all reacted. And then eventually some single cells formed from chemicals to single cells. Just bubbling around, single cells, and then they form themselves into primeval species. Of course, as is stated in the Puranas, jivo jivasya jivanam, every living being lives on another. Right? So we have to eat vegetables, or some people eat meat and milk. So when the first organisms came into being, they had to live on something, but there were no other. Maybe they lived on each other, maybe they were cannibalistic. Anyway, there they were in the primordial soup and souping around, gradually became more complex as water came from a big bang. There was water and it receded. Then they crawled onto the land and they became millipedes and quadrupeds. And eventually, this is from the Encyclopedia Britannica, by the way. Some of the quadrupeds saw that some fruits were a little bit high, and some of them were able to stand up to get it, and they became human beings. Human beings. Not human beings, not exactly. They're Homo, whatever, Neanderthal man came first, Homo erectus, and this and that. And eventually came to Homo sapiens. Homo sapiens means intelligence. I doubt sometimes. Anyway, in this way, we evolved and we evolved, and then one of these evolved beings became Charles Darwin and said that, well, it all came about like this, and we have a whole bunch of scientists, and the underlying supposition is that life comes from matter. Non-provable, and it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Why aren't you on the right time? I've told you so many times. Damn watch, why isn't it on the right time? That's not right. I'm insulting the watch, right? You shouldn't insult it. But it's a watch. I can shout at it to be on time as much as I like, but we won't get any reaction. There's no soul. That's why there's no reaction. Life means the presence of the soul, technically called Atma, or Jiva, or Jivatma. My father died. It's just about a year ago my father died, 90-something or other. When people die, what do we say? He went away, gone away, gone away. Chale ga, Hindi mein, Bangla chale gaye. Tamil, what do you say in any Tamils here? Poitip. Poitara. Paitaru. Telugu? Pochanaru. Pochanaru. Any other languages? Podia. What's that? Kannada? Anyway, the point I'm making is whatever language we speak, when someone dies, we say they've gone away. But the body's there. Why do we say they've gone away? Because the soul's gone away. Everyone understands, but we don't want to understand. The soul has gone away. What is the difference between a living body and a dead body? The presence or absence of the soul. Simple science. If you take it as a theory, it works. And that's why I believe in reincarnation. Not because I was born as a Hindu or a Jain or a Buddhist or a Sikh, but because it makes sense. And it also makes sense because I was raised in a Christian family where I was told that you have to believe in Jesus, otherwise you go to hell forever. And I thought, well, that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. Phew, that's pretty tough. I mean, God's not very merciful, is he? If he... You just get it wrong in one lifetime and you go to hell forever. Phew. But then when I heard about reincarnation, because no one taught me, in school they don't teach us, they don't teach you, they should teach at least you, we're born Hindus, that you get another chance, and another chance, and another chance, until you get it right. But it's better to get it right sooner rather than later, because this material world is full of suffering. Do you really want to be at VIT? You're proud of it. If you had all the money in the world, would you stay at VIT? No, no, no. Why are you at VIT? To get a degree, so you can get a job, so you can get money, so you can live your life out. What for? What for? What are you living for? Parents want you to do it. The parents want you to do it. No, you don't want to do it because of that. You want to have more experience in life. Well, whatever experience you have, there comes a point of time when you go away. And you're going to have more experiences. Maybe you're going to have experience of flying in the sky. You're flying in the sky as a sparrow and a hawk comes down and then your experience ends. in that life. Then you go to another body. Why aren't these things taught? VIT, one of the most prestigious colleges in India. Why aren't these things taught? And if you even ask the question, what are we living for? People, well, no answer, but people, I don't know about you, but when I used to ask those questions at school, people would just laugh at you. What a stupid question. Come on, let's go and have a beer. That's what Richard Dawkins said. You've all heard of Richard Dawkins, the God delusion. So he, the whole book is a tirade against belief in God. So in that book, when he comes to the point that, well, there's no meaning in life unless you believe in God. And he said, yeah, there's meaning in life, just like now. I just went to the pub and had a nice meal and glass of beer. And that's your meaning in life? That's all? For all your Oxford education and your worldwide fame and going to the pub and having a glass of beer? And that's all? I don't know how many of you drink beer. In the culture I was raised in this time, drinking beer was pretty much what everyone does. And you think, well, it's good fun. But actually, it's not good fun. Especially the next morning. If your life is just based on having some fun, sometimes you feel, what's going on? Is this all there is to it? And then you get older and older and you can't have fun. This body's something like a sponge. You know the sponge they use in the bath? It's another thing from the Western culture. You don't see so much in India. The bath sponge, right? You fill it up with water. You just pick it up and water drips out very easily. But the more water that comes out, the less water comes out. And then you have to squeeze it. And then water comes out. And then it gets to a point where even if you squeeze it very hard, you can only get a very little water out of it. So in the same way, when you're young, generally the body is healthy and you feel nothing can go wrong and you can enjoy yourself. But as you get older, the ability to enjoy the body becomes less and less and less. So that when you get to the age that my body's at, just to maintain the body to get through the day is a daily struggle. There's no happiness left. In the words of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of our acharyas, Briddha Kala Ailo Shab Shuk Bhagalo. Briddha Kal, the old age has come, Shab Shuk Bhagalo. It's all gone away, run away. So this is the real question we should be asking. Is there anything more? Science, okay, it's good, it's interesting, it's fascinating. But it's only to do with this world. It doesn't tell me anything about who I am. My soul, what am I doing? What is my deepest need? Bhagavad Gita speaks to our deepest need. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, that is called Bhagavat Tattva Vijnana. In modern Indian languages, the word Vijnana is used for science. But long before scientific development in the West, it was used in the Sanskrit language. Now, of course, in the ancient Vedic culture, there was tremendous science also. Just like we have in Delhi, the Dhruva Stambha. What do they call that? That's called the, what's the Urdu name for that? It's actually the Dhruva Stambha, but it's the pillar. Qutub Minar, yeah. I know the, actually it was originally the Dhruva Stambha. But that is made of perfect iron, so perfect it doesn't rust. It's not steel. Okay, well, I'm getting mixed up here. But anyway, the point is the technology was there, which can't be reproduced nowadays. That's just an example of very advanced technology based on science, which was known in this country. But the word Vigyan was used in Upanishadic context, Vedanta context, to mean knowledge of the soul. So this Bhagavat Tattva Vigyana, scientific knowledge of God. How can we get scientific knowledge of God? How can you learn about quantum mechanics? By analogy, first of all, you have to go to school and learn what the figure one stands for, then what the plus sign stands for, what the equal sign stands for, then you can, and what the two sign stands for, then you can have 1 + 1 = 2, 1 + 2 = 3, 1 + 3 = 4, and then you build on that. Plus, minus, multiply, divide. Then you come to arithmetic with decimals, and then algebra, and then geometry, and you're still not ready to go anywhere near quantum theory. But you have to grow up gradually, 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 gradually. And then, if you're really bright, and if you're really focused, and you're really into it, then you can start to study quantum theory. It's not for everyone. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Manushanam sahasreshu kaschit yatiti siddhye. Out of thousands of people, only very few are even eligible to understand this spiritual science. You are among those few. That's why you're here. But Krishna also warns, yatatamapi siddhanam kaschin mang veti tatvataha. Of those who have come to that level, very few come to know me fully, because it requires a lot of focus, a lot of attention, dedication. Now why do I say that? What I'm saying in effect is that you are potentially advanced transcendentalists. Why should I say that? Again, the very fact that you are here and that you can follow to some extent and you're even interested in what I'm talking about suggests that in a previous life you had some background in this. Now is the time to take it forward and further. And that's why we're going to have weekly talks here. Actually, we should have daily talks. We do have daily talks, but for the students, weekly talks to gradually introduce you to this subject. And when you understand that, what will you understand? Yomam eva sammudho janati purushottamam sasarvavid bhajati mam sarvabhavena bharata. When one comes to fully understand what is taught in Bhagavad Gita, as Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that anyone who has understood this without doubting worships me fully in all respects, without doubting. So how can you get to the stage of without doubting? This is a science. Science wins what? There's observation, hypothesis, experimentation. So it seems that in transcendental subject, it only gets as far as hypothesis, and after that is faith. But there is observation also. But what is observed in the experiment is yourself, because this is Atma Vigyan. We can observe what happens to ourselves when we take to the process of Krishna consciousness, that we become gradually, as we apply ourselves, we become free from kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya, lust, greed, anger, envy, desire, pride, and envy. We become free from that. We have realization of Krishna. So it is a science, but it's a very subtle science. Our request is you investigate this further. It's a very serious matter. If you consider that so many lifetimes we're going from body to body to body to body, and now we're in another body, and where are we going to go next? Just into another body, and another body, and another body, and it goes on. And each life you have to do what you don't want to do. Going to VIT is considered a privileged position, but you don't want to do it. It's just like circumstances force you to. Okay, well, you got the gist of it. All right, I'll finish there. I'm just giving an idea. There's something here that we're asking you to take an interest in. With your intelligence, it's not just blind faith. The most intelligent people that ever existed have pursued this. You see, actually the names are not even known now. If you ask in Tamil Nadu, who is Ramanuja? What's the answer? Ramanuja, mathematician. Why is he called Ramanuja? Because there was a great Vaishnava Acharya from Tamil Nadu called Ramanuja. And why was he called Ramanuja? What is the meaning of the name Ramanuja? Younger brother of Rama, which is the name of? Or Krishna. How about that? Balaram is also Rama. So there you go, you learned something today. So people don't even know the names of these highly intelligent people. Ramanuja was a genius. How did he have that? Just by himself, without any training, all the mathematical theories and theorems were coming in his mind. Well, he ascribed it to the mercy of Kula Devi. Who is his Kula Devi? Namakkal Thayyar. The Lakshmi at Namakkal in Tamil Nadu. So he was a theist. Newton was a theist. When they get too intelligent, Atichalak, we could say, and they become atheists. So yes, the philosophical knowledge given by the Vaishnava Acharyas, and even by non-Vaishnavas, we have the Shad Darshans, the six Darshans in Vedic culture. Hardly anyone can even understand them nowadays. They're so intricate. There was a Russian philosopher a few years ago. He died early. One of my Russian compatriots told me. He wrote a book on world philosophy, and he said that actually everything that goes on the name of philosophy outside India is just all baby's talk. Real philosophy has been studied in India. So this is the land you're born in, this is the culture you're born in, and even though India, Bharata, is trying to get rid of this culture in so many ways, it's being attacked in so many ways, the fact is that you've been born into this culture and you can easily appreciate it. So our request is come, study, learn. You have to start with some faith, and gradually you can become perfectly self-realized. That is our proposition. Another point, getting a little bit away from philosophy. Is your wife here now? Okay. There has been some disturbance because classes are going on for boys only. So, all well and good. We'll be having weekly classes for girls also. Chandrareka Mata, is she there? Okay. So please, girls, if you'd like to have attend weekly classes, see Chandrareka Mataji, and she's going to give you weekly classes. Okay, I think I'll sit down for a couple of minutes. Any questions, please?
I have a question that, what is your idea on opening Gurukuls at this time?
What is my opinion about Gurukul?
Gurukuls. If we have an opportunity to open
Gurukuls. I'm overseeing several Gurukuls. One in Gujarat, one in Punjab, one in Andhra, and right here in Salem in Tamil Nadu. And we'll do more. We want to revive this. Brahmachari Gurukule Vasandanto Guru Hitam Dasavan Acharan Nicho Sudhrita Guru Sohrida. The Brahmachari should live at the Gurukul and control his senses. And he should take a very humble position. They don't teach you that in VIT, do they? One should serve the guru like a menial servant. This is the way to get knowledge. We learn from Mahabharata, Upamanyu. Have you studied how to get knowledge? By sincere service to the guru. Yasya deve para bhakti yata deve tata guru tasya ite katita hiarta prakashante mahatmanaha. For one who has firm faith in the guru is the same as his faith in God. All the Vedic knowledge is revealed. So yeah, we're doing these Gurukuls. We'll do more. Krishna willing. If you want, you can study and come and teach also. We need good teachers. The main thing in Gurukul is character training. That's missing in modern education. It doesn't. As long as you pass your exam, you're considered to pass, and then you can be drinking, smoking, womanizing. But Gurukul education is for character training. Because without living a pure life, how can you understand God?
So do you believe that God is fair? Because I would like to say that I was born in a middle class family, upper middle class, so I have privilege. But there are so many kids who, like, they get born, but they're born in poor families, and they don't get food, and they die. So all we say is that God is fair and all, but how can we say that God is fair when some people, they get to live full lives, and some people, they just have abrupt endings?
Oh, well, that's again, thank you for raising that question. Reincarnation? Swakarma phala bhukpuman. Everyone gets what they deserve. That explains it. Otherwise, how do you explain it? If God is fair, then how is everyone? Why is not everyone born in a rich family? It's we get what we deserve. Purusha sukha dukhanam bhuktritve hetu ruchyate. It's right there in Bhagavad Gita. If you do good, you get good. If you do bad, you get bad. But it's very mixed, actually. There's nothing, no one's fully good or fully bad. It's all mixed. But the wonderful thing about Krishna consciousness, especially in this age, is that it doesn't matter. Because everyone in Kali Yuga is pretty much, by pristine Vedic standards, everyone's pretty fallen. So everyone can chant Hare Krishna and come up. But still, you have a little bit of a head start. Yeah, that's another reason why I, in my youth, I accepted reincarnation as a fact. Because otherwise, how do you explain there's so much discrepancy in human society? Why is there so much suffering in the world? We make our own fate.
In the Shri Krishna Mahamantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Why do we chant the name of Rama as well? Is he a form of Krishna, or is he considered equal?
Rama is another name of Krishna. Okay. Ramante yogino nante satyananda jiratmani iti rama padena so param brahma vidhiyate. The root meaning of the word Ram is the spiritual bliss in which the yogis take delight. So that's another meaning of the name Ram.
I have a follow-up question to that. Since Rama was born in the Treta Yuga, I guess, before Krishna, then why didn't he spread the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita?
Why didn't Ram spread knowledge of Bhagavad Gita?
Yeah.
Every avatar comes with a specific purpose, specific to the time and place and circumstance. Just like if I was in a village in Bengal, I wouldn't give the same talk as I gave now. But the ultimate aim is the same.
Like, why should we believe in God? Why should we believe this?
Why do you believe that hydrogen and oxygen combine to form water? Why do you believe?
I don't believe it, just it is. It is a scientific evidence.
Do you know? You say it's scientific, you believe on faith. There's good supporting evidence. There's good supporting evidence for the existence of God. There is. Actually, this intelligent design movement is going to flatten atheistic science. Well, not because they're determined to be atheistic. Then they come up with their multiverse theory. Otherwise, the idea that everything has come into being by random interactions, scientifically, it doesn't stand up to scrutiny. You can ask that question to so many big scientists. The head of the Human Genome Project, what was his name? Do you happen to know his name? He's a theist. Alistair McGrath, he's a Oxford, no, he's a Cambridge professor, who's a ideological opponent of Richard Dawkins, one of the most prominent physicists in the world at the present time is Sir Roger Penrose, who, he's not exactly a theist, but he's verging on it, so to speak. And he says that his proposition is that physics is stuck, we need to bring in consciousness as a separate phenomenon, and that will explain so many things. In other words, he's coming to the platform of Vedanta. So, because you are taught, or you hear that science leads us to atheism, you believe it. You just believe it, that's all. You haven't studied it. You don't know. There's tremendous, tremendous evidence for the existence of God, including all the saints. I'll tell you something. There are so many saints all over the world, in every culture. Now, one thing, it was about 70 years that communism was the state system of government in the USSR, right? And they were staunchly atheistic. They crushed theism wherever they could. Soon as the Soviet Union broke up and there was glasnost and people were allowed to start doing a thing, religion came up very strongly. Now, if religion was just, as Richard Dawkins says, some virus in the mind, that's his pseudo-scientific explanation, or some cultural meme, which is another pseudo-scientific explanation, and God, the idea of God is just some delusion, that his famous book is called The God Delusion, and for 70 years in the USSR, scientifically, they'd been teaching people that this doesn't make sense, then why would there be a massive upsurge of religion as soon as people were allowed to have the freedom to do so? That's because we are all spiritual beings and we all have a natural inclination toward God. In some people it's very covered over, as in the case of Richard Dawkins.
They said that you have told that because of bad karma, you will be having bad things in life. So, we should know what we did bad so that we won't repeat the mistakes, right? Why does it?
You don't know because you want to enjoy this world. You want to enjoy this world, we've come to this world forgetting Krishna, with the idea, let me enjoy separately. So Krishna gives you a mentality by which you can enjoy separately and suffer.
Yes, Krishna doesn't...
You don't know because you don't want to know. You want to be in illusion. But Krishna also gives knowledge by which we can come out of illusion. When we get battered enough by Maya, then we can start to think, what am I doing here? So many people, they have traumas and they don't remember horrible things which have happened to them because it's just too much, they can't handle it. So due to traumatic experience, they just can't remember horrible things that have happened to them. I was in Bangladesh starting from 1979, for about 10 years I was based there. In 1971, Bangladesh became independent from Pakistan. That time it was Pakistan, West Pakistan, East Pakistan. Throughout the whole of Bangladesh, most of Bangladesh, there'd been genocide, rape, horrible things. Horrible, horrible. I was traveling throughout the villages. No one spoke about it. It was just a few years ago. No one spoke about it. It's just, it's too horrific. They just, it was like a group understanding that we're not even going to talk about it. Human psychology. Anything else, or we shall finish now? One strict rule. No one is allowed to leave here without taking prasadam.